were commenting on the difference in attitudes of youngsters today as in contrast to the time that you taught, and you feel that the children are being raised differently and therefore their behavior is different.
I'm not so sure that this is the only cause for what we term the breakdown in children's behavior, but I know I refer quite frequently to a phrase that I used to use when I was teaching in the Hebrew class and kids would become a little bit unruly, and I always insisted on a rather strict discipline, and I would say, you wouldn't think of acting like that in public school. And when you hear the stories of how kids behave in public school today, I think their behavior in the Hebrew classes is better than what it is in public school.
Is that right? How did you discipline your students? Did you ever give them a
I yelled at them and gave them a smack occasionally, yes.
Did you? Did you feel that was helpful?
No question.
Today there's a lot of comment about paddling in the schools.
Well, I never went that far to do any paddling.
Yeah,
But a smack on the back or in the rear end or something like that occasionally would help.
Would get right to the seat of the
problem.
This is no pun intended. Everyone intended. Okay, that was quite interesting. We asked about what Zionist groups were you active with?
Well, I started out, I wasn't active in any Zionist group until I was in college. And the year I entered Pitt, as a freshman, I think I mentioned before that a friend of mine and I helped him organize the first collegiate Zionist chapter in Pittsburgh, known as the Avuka. And for the 4 years that I was at Pitt, I was very active in that and headed it up as the president. And even after I finished law school, I was, I think, the adult leader of the Avuka for maybe a year or two after that. And then I moved into the adult Zionist Organization of America, the Pittsburgh Zionist District. And at a very early age, I became the secretary of the district, and I was active in it continuously up until today. I'm not very active today.
Yeah. What other positions did you hold in the group?
Well, I was, as I said, secretary, and I was the vice president, and I was the chairman of the membership campaign, and then I was president for the 2-year term.
Of the Pittsburgh
Zionist District.
Did you hold any national office?
I was on the National Executive Committee. I now have some kind of an honorary position in what they call the Court of Honor or something like that.
I imagine there have been...
That clock was given to me when I finished my term as president.
I imagine you've had several honors find you for your work.
Yeah.
Can you mention some of them?
This plaque I was given. Was
Israel
also given,
Service Award.
That was given to me in 19 by the ZOA, Pittsburgh.
Have there been any awards outside of Pittsburgh or recognitions?
No.
Okay, so your life at this point was your law practice, you taught, and you were very active in the Zionist AZA.
Not AZA, no. No.
AZA.
Pittsburgh Zionist
District. I'm reading it backwards. Yeah, ZOA, right.
AZA is the initials of another organization,
yeah.
So that's the reason
it's
I corrected that.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Right. Were you active in any other groups outside of the Zionist organization?
Well, I've been secretary of the Beth HaMidrash HaGadol Synagogue since October of 1930. And I'm still secretary.
Who was active in rebuilding that synagogue? Did you have a part in organizing the rebuilding?
I played a good part in it.
Well, be modest.
How good?
Well,
exactly.
Did you promote
the rebuilding, or and for what purpose was this done? Since the Jewish population is out of the hill.
Well, as I said, I've been not only the secretary, but over the years I had to take a more prominent part than just keeping the minutes or keeping the books and collecting the dues. But as the years went on, I guess they did look to me for some leadership in it. And the synagogue, as I told you before, was located on Washington Street, right in the heart of the urban redevelopment program. Way back in 1955, when we were approached by the city and told that we would be involved in it, and there was to be a public hearing in the council chambers, we went on record at that time that we would not oppose giving up our building, because it was an old building. It had been opened in 1894 and needed a lot of improvements. But we stipulated two points. First, that we would insist on being paid what we thought was a fair compensation for the property. And secondly, that we would be allowed to rebuild in the same area. Because normally they don't give you parcels of ground in urban development for the erection of a religious institution. Because it's, you know, it doesn't produce taxes. But since this was just a replacement of what we already had in the area, we felt that we were entitled to that. And our thinking on it was, motivated by various sources. First of all, out of about 21 Orthodox synagogue groups that had been located in the Hill District, as it was known, the Upper Hill, this Beth Medrash HaGadol was the earliest Orthodox synagogue. There are only two congregations in a city that are older, and that is the Road of Shalom, which is the Reform, and the Tree of Life. This is the next one. We actually have a charter that was issued in 1873.
Do you still have a copy of it?
Yes.
Did you preserve any of the building at all, or any parts?
Well, we'll come to that, yeah. And then, so that having been the first, and by this time it was the last, because all of the others had already given up, moved up, given up activity, and so on. So we felt that we owed it to the city to preserve something of what had been a very prominent institution in the city in the early days. Secondly, I and a number of us felt that the heart of the city was not going to be evaporated completely. That sooner or later there would be a movement back. And actually, as part of the redevelopment, it called for the erection of apartment houses in the area. So we felt that that, together with the business district, would always have some Jews that would be looking for a place of worship. Mm-hmm. Furthermore, it was the most central location for the entire area, because Jews were expanding into the South Hills and into the East Hills and into the Squirrel Hill and now to the North Hills, and the most central area for all of these places was exactly where we were. And there would always, we felt, be a need for a place where a person, that even if he didn't live in the area, would want to come in and observe his Yahrzeit and say Kaddish and attend services when there wouldn't be a minyan elsewhere. And it actually has worked out that way. We still maintain a minyan every day, morning and evening.
What is your membership?
Well, we have a rather strange membership. We have, I would say, roughly about 250. But our dues are very nominal, because we have a number of our members that don't attend services there, but have answered to our appeal that says that this is a facility that serves the entire community. And some people recognize it and give us $25 a year just to help us maintain the place. Those at the 10 services on the high holidays pay $50 a year. It's a very minimal budget that we operate. We don't have any rabbi. We don't have any full-time cantor. We hire a cantor for the high holidays. And we manage to live within our means.
You have lay leaders for the services?
Yes.
What part do you take? Do you lead the services? Or do you lead the services?
No. Occasionally I do, but not on a regular basis.
Do you attend?
Of course, then to finish the story, we did get a fairly reasonable compensation for our old building, and we used that then together with some new funds that we gathered together and erected the new building, which is located just about a block away from where the old building stood. And it's been in operation now since 1964, the new building.
Did you preserve any of the furniture or anything from the old building, the arcs?
That's naturally the Torahs. Incidentally, the old building suffered a fire in the basement in March of 1960, so we had to get out a little bit faster than we ordinarily planned, and we were located temporarily in an old restaurant building for 4 years while the new building was being planned and built. But we preserved the Aron Kodesh, that's the Holy Ark, and it's now standing in the new building. We preserved the bima, or the platform in front of the ark.
How far back would you say?
And we preserved all of the pews that were in the main synagogue.
So they date back to the
1894. The ark was refinished, and the pews were all refinished, and they're beautiful furniture. You can't get new ones today like that.
Did I misunderstand? The charter was issued in 1873 or 1893?
1873 was the original charter.
And you didn't have pews and a bima and an ark in 1873 or 1874?
Well, they did, but had another location, because the building on Washington Street was already the second or third location of the synagogue. Mm-hmm. It had originally been located in the downtown area on one of the corners of the block that the Grant Building now stands on.
I believe a few years ago, was there not some sort of ceremony honoring you for your part in rebuilding the synagogue?
No, but we had a 100th anniversary.
I recall something.
Yeah, we had a rather festive dinner observing the 100th anniversary of the congregation.
Now I'd like to know when and where and how Rose came into the picture.
Should have asked her now. She was out.
Yeah.
Well, she can tell you as well as I can tell you.
I know. We're interviewing you. When did you meet Rose and where?
Strangely enough, I met her at a Zionist occasion.
Doesn't sound strange at all. Sounds very logical.
We had a national convention in Pittsburgh of a Zionist organization. And we had the opening session was held at the Syria Mosque. And in order to get in, you had to have tickets. That is, if you were not a delegate. And I was, I think, in charge. I'm not sure now whether your father was in charge or I was in charge of the... take it off the record.
Let's
say Rose's father was... either a chairman or had something to do with the convention. His name was Jacob Lichter. And I was in charge of the box office. And Rose came down to help out in the box office, and that's where I first met her.
And how did you you take one look at Rose and decide that this young lady is going to be my wife, or did it take time? Did you court her? And what happened?
Well, we met and we continued our meetings.
It eventually
flowered into our marriage.
How long before, since from the time you met her until you were married?
Well, I think I met her in the summer of 1940, and we married in December of 41.
What was Rose doing at the time that you met her, as far as professionally?
I think she was working for the Jewish Community Relations, working for the Public Assistance. At the time, she was working for the Jewish Social Service Bureau, which was then located in the Federation of Jewish Philanthropies building on Fernando Street.
Was Rose active in Zionist groups as well, or was she there simply to help out her father?
I can't remember whether she was active in the Junior Hadassah at that time or not, but I believe she was, which was the young people's group sponsored by the Hadassah.
And did you have a big wedding or small wedding?
No, we had just a private wedding.
Small private wedding.
Right.
And where was your first home?
We lived in an apartment on South Negley Avenue for 6 years, and from there we moved into this present house.
South Negley and
720, I think, South Negley, right opposite Elmer Street, I believe.
That would be Shadyside.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it was just about a block and a half away from Walnut Street.
Did Rose continue to work, or did she become a housewife?
No, she continued to work up until, I guess, shortly before our first child was born, which was in January of 1945.
And who was the name of your first child?
Carl.
Carl.
My son.
How many children did you have?
Two.
Two boys?
No. The other is my daughter, Miriam. Was born 3 years after that.
Can you tell us something about your children? Are they married? Their education?
Unfortunately, neither is married.
Neither are married.
Carl is went to the college at the University of Pittsburgh and the law school at the University of Pittsburgh, and was finished in June of 1969. And after graduating, he passed his boards in Pennsylvania and then signed up with the VISTA program. And they located him with the Neighborhood Legal Service Office up in Lansing, Michigan. And he's been up in Lansing, Michigan ever since. He's now with the Michigan Public Service Commission as the Director of Policy.
And Mary?
And he passed his boards in Michigan, so he's able to practice both in Pennsylvania and Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Miriam finished high school at Taylor Alderdice and then went to the school at Ohio University in Athens, Ohio. And she finished her college course in 69 and has been teaching elementary school at Rockville, Maryland ever since.
Mm-hmm. Did you say elementary?
Yes.
Elementary.
Now teaching in fifth grade.
Can you tell me a little about their early education in Hebrew school and whether they followed in your footsteps, interest in Zionism? And something about the way they were, well, let's take that and then we'll talk about the way they were raised in contrast or similarity to the way you were raised?
The contrast was very, very great.
In what way would you say?
Well, for one thing, I'm afraid I didn't do too much teaching with him personally.
As far
Some,
as Hebrew?
Right. They attended classes at the Hebrew Institute from a very early age and continued even after their finishing. In other words, Carl, after he finished the bar mitzvah, continued classes there for a number of years. And Miriam likewise started at an early age and continued for several years while she was in high school. I sent both of them to Camp Masad in the summer, which is a Hebrew-speaking camp.
Yeah.
Masad, M-A-S-A-D, which is located up in the Poconos. Miriam also went to... No, she didn't go to the Y camp as a... That's right, both of them went to... The,
yeah.
No, it was the Y camp out at the yeah, the Laurel Y camp up near Somerset. This is before the Y and the X merged. And then they went several years to this Camp Masad for a 2-month period, which I felt was a strong influence in giving them living conditions and under Jewish environment. And they were able to make use of the Hebrew that they learned too. And some of it stuck with them because I know Miriam then went 2 years to Israel. Once she went to Kfar Silver and the other time she went to live on the kibbutz during the summer. And so some of the Hebrew stuck with her there. Carl never went to Israel up until this past year.
And he did.
And, he, to my great surprise and pleasure, he was chosen to head the United Jewish Appeal campaign this past year at Lansing. And he joined the Young Leadership National Mission that was organized by the United Jewish Appeal to go to Israel, and he went there this past November. And surprisingly, he still remembered the little Hebrew to write me back a note in Hebrew.
Mm-hmm. You said that you were surprised that he was elected or chosen for this position. What made you surprised? Has he been active in any way?
Well, he had, as a student, he was never active in Jewish activities, to speak of. So I was, I say, pleasantly surprised when I saw that... when he was up in Lansing, he joined in the campaigns there for several years in soliciting and then working, and must have done a fairly good job to be asked to head it up.
In other words, he was carrying on family tradition. Some of it had rubbed off.
Some of it.
What sort of interest did Carl have as a youngster, and what type of things was he active?
I don't know, he was just a normal, well-rounded boy, liked sports, didn't take his studies too seriously up until he got into law school. And he was a good mixer. I think he was fairly well-liked by his friends and did the things that youngsters normally do.
Did you maintain the same type of environment as far as the Sabbath and conversations at mealtime, similar to the home that you came from?
No, I wouldn't say that. To a limited degree, yes, but you can't speak of the comparison of the same breath.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that there was less communication with your children than you had with your father and mother?
No, I wouldn't say so. I think our lines of communication were pretty good. Although there were occasions, I know, that it was easier for him to speak to his aunt than it was to speak to his father.
I think that's typical of most teenagers, actually. His aunt, which aunt would you say?
Well, I think his aunt Naomi, for one.
And
maybe his aunt Miriam, which is Rose's sister.
And Miriam, what type of activities was she engaged in outside of school, the Hebrew school? Did she participate in any of the young Zionist groups or Hadassah?
I think she was in a young Judea group for a number of years. And other than that, she belonged to a girls' club group, and so again, I did the things that the girls normally do.
What was there any other type of education that your children received?
Well, Carl took lessons playing the clarinet and played in the orchestra at the Taylor Alderdice, and Miriam took lessons for the piano for a while, and then also took lessons with the harp, and she played in the school orchestra with the harp.
Did they play in any other orchestras?
No.
Just the Taylor
Alderdice. Right. And also the All City, I think it was the All City Orchestra that was organized through the school system. Carl belonged to the Cub Scouts, and Miriam was in the B'nai B'rith Girls group, and these things really escaped me for the most part.
Were you involved with him in activities such as Cub Scouts? Now, the Cub Scout would be, the mother would be a den mother.
Right.
Did he go on to Boy Scouts?
No.
Was he involved in any groups that you were involved with? Because of you or with you?
No.
He was interested in sports.
Very much so.
Football, all kinds of sports.
All kinds of sports.
Did he play? Was he a spectator or a participant?
Oh, no, he was a participant. Always was. He played in Little League 1 year, and or several years. And of course, that was a source of conflict with the regular attendance at the Hebrew Institute.
Was there a resistance and, to Hebrew education because of these other activities?
Yes, I said this was a source of conflict because they competed with each other for the same period of time. But mostly, when he was in college, he also was a member of a fraternity, and they had a fraternity sports competition. And mostly, though, it was pickup games that he played in.
Are your children observant religiously? Do they belong to synagogues? Where?
They attend services. I can't say whether they're affiliated as members, but I know they attend services.
Regularly or high holidays?
High holidays.
Yeah.
And perhaps on another, unusual occasion, but not regularly every week.
Do they come home often for the holidays when they can?
We managed to have a Seder for 2 nights in which we have everybody from the family that can possibly get there. We usually have a group of about from 20 to 23, 24 at the Seder.
When you say everybody from the family, you mean your brothers and sisters
right,
and their family?
Right. And the children manage to come home for the Seder every year, and they're usually here either for Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur, and on other occasions too, but on those two occasions they're regularly at home.
Does your family still get together regularly, you say, the Seders? Do you feel that you're in close contact with your immediate family still?
Yes, I'd say very close in contact. And generally, even aside from the Seders on Pesach, we generally get together for a holiday meal on Rosh Hashanah and sometimes on Shavuos too, at different homes, but
each one takes his turn.
Right. Not necessarily their turn. Well, it isn't on a scheduled basis, right, but we managed to get together. And a holiday without it wouldn't be a real holiday.
So holidays are still very important in your life.
I think so.
The whole family. That's a lot of people to cook for. Does Rose do all the cooking when that's here, or do different people pitch in?
I think they help each other out some.
Everybody has a kosher home, so that there's no problem along those lines.
Right.
Can you tell us something about the religious observances that you still maintain?
Well, for one thing, when my father died in 1952, I naturally went to the shul every day to say Kaddish, and I continued attending daily services for many years at the synagogue. In fact, I continued it on a regular basis up until I had my last previous heart attack in January of 1970, and then I sort of tapered off and didn't do it regularly every day, but always managed to go to the services on Saturday and usually on Sunday morning, because Sunday I stayed on and did the office work at the synagogue. And I put tefillin on and daven every morning at home when I don't go to the synagogue.
Is this something you continued from the time you were a youngster, or is this something you picked up after your father passed? Is this something you've always done?
No, there was a break in my life. I didn't do it. I'd say that I did it from the time I was bar mitzvah up until maybe a year or two, about a couple of years after my mother, Lashalom, died, which was in 1925. And thereafter, I used to go to service occasionally on Saturday. And of course, when I became the secretary of the synagogue in 1930, I used to go there sometimes on Saturday, generally on Sunday, to take care of the office work. But I did not engage in daily prayer services up until my father died.
Then, when your father died,
in 52.
The responsibility, so to speak, to carry.
No, it wasn't a question of responsibility. I had just gotten into the habit again of attending services every day and actually enjoyed it, so I continued it.
And putting on tefillin, was there a break of time?
Well,
you did not,
that would be the same period.
And why did you not do it at that time?
I can't give you a clear answer. I just...
It just wasn't important to you with that?
It wasn't important. I just got away from it, that's all.
Do you feel that you just, when you say you enjoy it, do you get a sense of uplift? Or I'm just curious if you can put your finger on your observances, what it does for you.
I say my prayers in Hebrew, and I understand my Hebrew. And it's full of poetry and uplifting thoughts, and I just enjoy it, that's all.
You feel that it really
it sets my day.
It sets your day.
That's right.
It sets you up as a person,
right,
in the right, going along the right track of mind.
Right.
It's a type of life you would like to live.
It isn't necessarily a prayer in the sense that most people understand prayer, in which you are asking for things for yourself. It isn't that at all. It's just as if you were reading something beautiful. You know, at the beginning of the day, and you got into a mood that made you feel good.
It's, so to speak, a philosophical point of view, or a way of life.
Yes, it becomes a matter of habit more than anything else.
And you feel you're a better person for this.
I don't know when I say a habit, you know, when you're accustomed to doing things and you don't do them, you miss them. And if I don't do it now, I miss it.
It isn't a question of
some religious people that it's a mitzvah or it's a, the contrast would be a sin, or no, it's just something that you feel.
No, I don't do it because it's necessarily a mitzvah, and that I'm afraid that something is going to happen to me if I don't do it, or something like that. It's I don't, for example, in the evening prayers, I don't participate. I do it just in the morning. And there are a lot of things. Some things I do, some things I don't do. I'm not a strict observant of all of the rules by any means.
Do you eat in non-kosher outside of your own home? Are you
Observe kosher to a limited extent. I don't eat any seafood, and I don't eat any pork or any products of pork. But I will on occasion eat a trafe of beef.
Okay.
But on the whole, when I go out, for the most part, I eat fish.
More comfortable.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you tell us something on how you view Pittsburgh's Jewish life and its place in the general community now? In contrast to the way it was when you were a youngster. And then, also, in regard to your past activity, can you tell us something about other groups that you were active in? And one question before we get to that, where was your son bar mitzvah? Was he bar mitzvah at the Washington
no,
State School?
No, he was bar mitzvah at the Young People Synagogue.
Now, can you tell us something about the other organizations in which you might have some important part?
Well, I guess one area of a lot of activity that I hadn't discussed yet was my affiliation with the United Jewish Federation of Pittsburgh. After I had finished my term of office as president of the Zionist District, I was elected to the board of directors of the United Jewish Fund, as it was known in those days. I think I joined, it must have been around 1951, 52, 53, something like that. And around 1954, there was a very hot issue that arose in the annals of the United Jewish Fund when it was proposed to merge the Federation of Jewish Philanthropies together with the United Jewish Fund to become what is now known as the United Jewish Federation of Pittsburgh. And at that time, it was a very heated debate, I would say, that prevailed in the city among various organizations. And the Zionist groups generally were opposed to the merger, because you have to remember that in those days, prior to the period I'm just discussing, there was always a United Jewish Fund campaign for overseas needs, but there was a great deal of contest as to how the funds were to be divided. In those days, there was the Zionist and the non-Zionist and the anti-Zionist groups, and you had to battle out to see whether the money was going to go for settlement in Palestine, or whether it was going to go for Birobidzhan in Russia, or for other needs which satisfied the demands of the non-Zionists and anti-Zionists. And the Federation of Jewish Philanthropies, you might say in those days, were largely conducted by the old line Jewish families in Pittsburgh, which were the descendants of the German and Reform families. And they were the ones that were not generally sympathetic to settlement in Palestine. So when the question of the merger coming up, the Zionist groups generally were fearful that this same group would take over the leadership in the combined or merged organization, and funds for Palestine would suffer. I didn't see it that way. I felt that the community was heading toward a more homogenized group rather than a split up in the old line of Galicianer and Hungarians and Litvaks and Russians and Poles and so on. It was becoming more of a homogenized group. And I felt that the future lay in a strong Jewish community rather than a splintered Jewish community. So I plugged for the merger. And eventually it was won out. We had a very interesting meeting, mass meeting, in the Y Auditorium when the vote was taken on this, in which representatives of both sides addressed the group. And I was the one that was perhaps considered a turncoat to the Zionist cause because I supported the merger group. But it passed, and from then on I was really in the activities of the United Jewish Federation with both feet. And shortly thereafter, in 1955 or 56, I was chosen to be the chairman of the Social Planning and Budgeting Committee, and I held that office for a number of years. I was also a vice president of the Federation, and I've been on the board and on the budgeting committee for many years, and generally was very active in it.
And you have played a really large part in the shaping of the present day Jewish community.
I wouldn't put it quite that vigorously, but I played a part in it, I feel. And that was one of the reasons why I was given that plaque.
The Manuel Spector Award.
The Manuel Spector Award, which I received in 1964, I believe.
Do you feel that the community has homogenized? That your predictions come about, do you feel?
Yes, definitely.
Totally?
I don't know whether totally, but radically. Because today, when you see some of the people who are playing a leading role in gathering funds and in budgeting the funds of the United Jewish Federation, and of course, the establishment of the State of Israel had a great deal to do with it, and of the development since then. But I would say that many, many of the old line families have completely withdrawn, and the leadership today has been taken over in the Federation by both the old line groups of, you know, the descendants of the Litvaks and so on, as well as the Reform group. And although there is still no unanimity of opinion on all subjects within the Federation, there's no question as to their support of Israel and the survival of Jewry and such things as, for example, the naming of the Y as now the Jewish Community Center, which would have been unheard of 25, 30 years ago.
Why?
And in the giving, of budgeting of funds for the all-day schools, for like the Yeshiva Achitnimim and the Hillel Academy and the Community Day School. When I remember in the early days of the 1950s, when the Yeshiva was first started here, and the Hillel Academy, and there was some mention of giving some Federation funds to those, some of the big givers threatened to walk out of the organization if that was done. It was considered a parochial school, and it was strafe. You couldn't use any community money for that.
Why did you make the comment that it would be unheard of to use the term the Jewish Community Center? Because think groups were so divided?
No, I think that, for example, the Irene Kotman settlement was not Jewishly directed. It had club activities of all kinds and social activities and sports activities, but there was very little Jewish content in its program. And for many years at the Y, it could also be said a great deal of emphasis was put on club activities and on the gymnasium floor and on the theater and the music group, but there was no Jewish tum to the organization. And I think that this emphasis on calling the institution Jewish Community Center has had something to do with identifying it with the Jewish community, which it was not so identified before.
Well,
And the content of its program has changed too.
Yes, I know it does.
When you can see how closely the center is now operated in line with trips to Israel and the content that they put into their summer camping program and the Hebrew classes that they conduct among youngsters and adults, this is definitely a new trend in the organization.
And this, I imagine, is satisfying to you.
Yes, I'm happy to see it.
So you can let the Jewish life
now we've run out.